Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
And we're joined, as always, with Joshua Luis Smith.
Hello.
It's questionable internet opinions. How are you doing today?
You know, I'm pretty good. I actually have been unreasonably zen this week because of the lovely spring weather. And not because it's lovely, but because allergy season's come really early and I've just been hopped up on allergy medications. So I've been really zen.
That's good.
How are you guys?
I'm good.
Yeah, I'm doing all right.
Yeah.
I'm tired, weirdly. I don't know why. Like, it's one of those, like, you know, 2 days of slow days and you get tired from that for some reason.
No, that can actually take a lot out of you.
Yeah.
I also am a big believer in the idea of, like, when you do, like, I had 5 crazy days in a row, and then the day or the 2 days after that, there's, like, a balance thing that happens where you just kind of shut down.
You call it sleep debt.
Yeah.
Sleep dead.
Yeah.
Sleep debt.
Sleep dead. I was like, sleep dead sounds like a German, like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sleep dead.
Sleep dead.
Since apparently this show is all about introducing people to German words.
I know.
Yeah. With Ordnung.
Ordnung, yeah.
Well, I am a big.
Such a good word, though.
So good.
Yeah.
I'm a big proponent of anytime anybody starts talking about sleeping patterns, I get really into it. Because I'm like really, I'm a big believer in the idea that some people are born night people and some people are born morning people. You can get up at like 6 or 7 a.m. almost daily if you had to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a morning person, but I have not always been a morning person.
Okay.
I have turned into a morning person because of my career in coffee.
Yeah.
Like I all through high school I was late for school every day in high school. Every single day. The attendance office ladies, I would come in and I'd be like, "Hey." And they were like, they had like an attendance sheet with my name already on it and I would just like sign it and like it was a good look.
No, because it's interesting to me because it all comes back to like cavemen and like there had to be someone guarding. So like if you had a group of 3 people, like not all 3 people could be asleep at the same time.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they'd get
they'd
get murdered. Like they'd get killed by bears or something.
Specifically bears.
That's why we need guns in schools.
Betsy DeVos, man.
Yeah, I know.
What the fuck is that?
I can't.
It's just a scary thing. Well, apparently there was a bunch of, I just saw a headline. This is like such bad journalism that I'm just quoting a headline, but apparently someone said that there was a bunch of research that was done very recently, like post Betsy DeVos being confirmed, that charter schools don't work. Surprise.
Yes, I definitely read one of those articles, but I've been reading so many articles that whatever's retained in my brain right now isn't the best.
Yeah, shout out to any person that's still writing articles and actually citing. Because, like, I can imagine it's so easy to just want to write, like, some shittily researched think piece.
And it's done a lot. You know, actually, when I was listening to the interview you guys did on Monday, you had said, I don't remember if it was an article or a think piece. And I was like, oh, yeah, getting down to the root of the word article, they really, you know, we kind of treat them as one and the same, but articles are researched, cited.
Oh, yeah.
And just the way you said that, and I went, right, they're different.
Yeah.
I mean, of course they are. But
and then article and a think piece and an editorial are completely different. And then you get into, like, what's a blog post compared to those things. Like, you know, an editorial, I think there's a level of, like, someone taking one take on an issue, whereas like a think piece is like a written down stream of consciousness that usually is really just I don't know. I feel like think pieces, it's this tendency to like get up your own asshole thing. And I feel like there's a lot of that. Like actually, so I know the one things we really wanted to talk about was that it's International Women's Day today.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a lady.
Yeah.
You are.
I have a lady cat on my lap.
You do. She's adorable.
Yeah. She's a feminist.
You think so?
I mean, right?
I
think so.
Yeah. She punches our boy cat in the face all the time.
That's true.
Keeps him in place.
Yeah.
Keep that ego checked.
Yeah.
Yep.
But anyway, so I know that we talked last QIO about the idea of like faux feminism. And I think that's really interesting when bringing up the idea of like just going up your own elitist, bubbled, like asshole. You get a group of people. That's kind of what I think about when I think of think pieces. It's just like a bunch of people in a room, like a think tank, where it's just a bunch of people in a room talking about a thing that they know the best and then not really doing something different with it.
Yeah.
And I think that that's like really problematic and like not relatable. And of course, this is a person that's sitting with three other people that...
Three other people? Are you counting? Are you counting, Moody?
I am. I mean, because it's tricky when the premise of a show is just like, let's talk about our art form.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, it's really easy to just kind of like end up in a place where all you're doing is like a circle jerk.
I was just thinking circle jerk.
It's such a good word. Like, yeah. I get really annoyed with people that are like really educated musicians,
mm-hmm.
just like talking about the intricacies of Chinese art song. Cause it's like, at what point do you think anybody's gonna give a shit? Like,
It's the ivory tower circle jerk.
Exactly.
And it's something that I really didn't like. Oh, please join. Yes.
White people singing Chinese art song is peak ivory tower circle jerk.
Yes.
Like, in my mind.
And I'm sure there's gorgeous Chinese art song. In no way, shape, or form.
There is. I've heard some really... because my grad school is very international, and we hosted a... World Music Night to benefit the International Rescue Committee, who is an organization that helps refugees. And there was a Chinese soprano who was saying, oh my God, it was beautiful.
That's different though.
She's from China, literally. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there's a difference, I think, between...
I'm just saying it's a beautiful thing. That's all.
Totally get it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's a difference between, I think, a highly educated person putting on a recital of Chinese art song and promoting an initiative to teach Chinese culture. Do you know what I mean?
There's a complete
difference between, like, and then as an extension of that, maybe you put on a recital. But if you're just presenting Chinese art song as a white person outside of any context, like, that is the pinnacle of like privilege to me. And it's not relatable. And you're doing disservice to both the country, the culture, and to your audience when you do that.
Because, like, unless you've coached with like a Chinese specialist, you're gonna be pronouncing it wrong. You don't have any connection to the culture, so mm-hmm. it's going to be inauthentic.
Mm-hmm.
And also, fuck you.
I can only imagine. I mean, I always had that when people in grad school, when Goyim would sing Ravel's Hebrew songs, and I was always like, okay. Or like when Catholics do Fiddler on the Roof. But anyway, that's my personal
I feel that way when I hear a really straight-laced and very sober Irish folk song, because because the Irish song tradition came from drunk people standing up at bar clothes and being like Carol, it's time for a song. And then, I don't know why it's Carol, but it is. And just, like, standing...
Carol O'Malley.
And just, like, standing up and bellowing out, probably out of tune, but I mean, like, with every fiber of their being. And so when I hear just, like, some sober, just kind of, like, person be like, so fill to me the parting glass, I'm like, Go home, or get drunker.
That's why I kind of feel, and go with me on this, because this is the latest edition and things that Josh is going to say that are going to have the classical music community want to burn him like a witch. I kind of think we should just burn down all the recital halls.
I said it.
Daniel is appalled.
Well, I'm interested in why you said that.
I'm mostly kidding.
Well, no, because I think there's probably something metaphorical to that, I'm
yeah.
sure.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Because I know for me, like, the idea of acoustic, I would like to burn down all of the new recital halls.
Yeah, okay, no, I mean, from an acoustic standpoint, yes, recital halls can be a good thing. And kind of where I'm going on this is, we have managed, we like, as let's go back to the Ivory Tower. As Ivory Tower musicians, we like to somehow suck the soul and life out of everything good. And all these songs that were sung in salons and sung in bars and sung that, now we get in our like cheap Men's That's Warehouse tuxedos and sing them.
Always pisses that pisses me off. And I don't understand. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm totally cutting
you off. No, you're fine, because
I don't understand why people expect classical singers in their 20s and 30s to wear suits. Because in what world am I, Daniel Johansson, who's living on $1,000 a month budget, gonna be able to afford to wear a suit? Yeah. Or like, what? I never casually wear a suit. I like don't like wearing suits. Like, it's not part of my aesthetic. Like, there's no world where the only time I wear a suit is if I have to impress some rich white person. Like, so that's the bar for wearing a suit. And fuck anybody that's like, if you're a classical singer, you have to wear a suit. And I will take that to the grave. And if someone's not going to hire me for that, they can go fuck themselves.
Love it. But let's get...
Genuinely. That's like such a... Sorry, no. But like that is always pissed me off. I was like 18 and that pissed me off, because I was like, I am living on student loans. Like, in what world am I justifying a $150 suit purchase? Like, go fuck yourself. Sorry.
We are earning our explicit ratings.
Yeah,
today.
Today we are. I don't know what's up. I'm just, you know.
You're fired up.
I don't know. But we got into all of this wanting to talk about intersectionality.
Yes. And
because I was mad earlier about intersectionality and faux feminism. I was like ranting and raving around our apartment today because of faux feminism and elite feminism and skinny white feminism. It's just, it's upsetting to me that these white feminists specifically...
Mm.
Believe that they are blameless and complete victims of the patriarchy. Because if you look at just this election, it was white women that voted for Trump. I mean, obviously, white men also put Trump in office. But I mean, like, had 100% across the board, all white women voted for Hillary... Hillary would be in office right now.
And by a lot.
By a vast margin. Yeah. By a vast margin.
No, there was a study that showed that educated white women, the majority of them voted for Trump.
And so...
and I know. Educated white women, which is the like...
Wasn't it like 53% of white women voted for Donald Trump? Which is so profoundly upsetting to me. And it is so confusing to me that these... feminist events and feminist organizations and feminist women and women who are proud to be women are not standing up and defending non-white women and non-cis.
There's a giant transphobic community among feminists. There's like, I followed a couple like Marxist feminist Marxist radical feminist meme stash groups or something, and they were talking about, all of a sudden it was just like this extremely transphobic rhetoric, and I was like, whoa, like I was so here for like the communism talk and like the feminism talk and the like reaching out to like underserved groups, but then it's like so trans people are an underserved group, and like I don't know. And I obviously am a white, straight, cis man over here talking about that. But I don't know. I do get where you're coming from. And I think you should finish your thought.
Yeah, I do too. So, I don't know. I just like, I'm seeing a lot, you know, because I also follow a lot of like, you know, feminist, like, yes, all women, blah, blah, blah stuff. And a lot of the stuff I'm seeing is the narrowing down of the ideal feminist to thin, white, long hair, hipster, skinny jeans, thin, just like skinny white feminism.
Yeah.
And there is so much more to the female identity than that.
So much
and
more.
I saw like a weird meme today. Sorry. I saw a weird meme today where it showed a very buxom woman in very tall platform heels walk up to a book, pick it up, and then it was kind of like the evolution of man thing, where it was like monkey, Neanderthal, blah blah blah. But it was presumed hooker seeing a book, hooker picking up the book, but wearing something more demure. Hooker reading the book, wearing something more demure, taking off the heels, and then like hair in a bun, breast reduction, wearing a sweater, wearing flats, and walking away with the book under her arm. And feminists can be sex positive. Feminists can be plus size. Feminists can be of color. Feminists could have been born a man. Feminists could be men. And feminists also, and I'm not trying to exclude it, feminists can also be white, skinny white women.
Of course.
But the fact is, skinny white women need to fucking step out of their apartments and talk to people and include people and make art with people who don't look like them.
Yep.
And people with different experiences from them. And I'm not seeing that. And I'm mad.
Right, because it's... Okay, so white feminists, despite the fact that they are part of a group that's being marginalized here, they're still amongst the feminist community, the people with privilege.
Absolutely.
And because of that, they should be using that privilege to lift up the less served feminist group, even though I'm acknowledging that they themselves have less privilege than, say, me.
Right.
But
they still have privilege.
They still have privilege.
Yes. And it's upsetting to me because, like, later next week we're going to be talking to someone about a plus-size artists collective. And the person that we're going to be talking to, her name is Jessie Oliver. She and I had a conversation about, like, how hard it is as plus-size women to be cast in a romantic lead. And it suggests that fat women are not deserving of love. Because if a director looks at a fat woman who has just demonstrated skill, nuance, in an audition and says, yeah, but I'm not sure that the audience would be convinced that that fat woman would be in love with that skinny man, is beyond comprehension. Because I am a fat woman and I have found love. And any suggestion that I am not deserving of that is horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
Well, it's like a societally influenced, like, self-esteem destroyer. And I think that's the thing, is like when you play in, I don't know, man, I can't sit here and I can't have opinions on this. Like I can't. Like I don't know. I think it's hard. I know I'll do this. Men, for example, the idea that men playing into, like, what is beautiful and what is not is in no way... Men deciding what is beautiful for women, or, like, what is socially beautiful, is, like, a destructive tendency. And I think that the arguments that I've heard women make about female feminists is, if a female feminist plays into those constructs of beauty, it's potentially dangerous.
Yeah.
And I can't.
It's, yeah.
I can't go for, I can't. Yeah.
No, it's such a, yeah, no, it's so it's so hard because, okay, so there's definitely parts of the beauty industry, right, that are designed for male gaze, right?
Absolutely.
But I know women who enjoy that performative aspect for their own, their own pleasure with,
yeah,
that. And that's feminist too.
Are you right, talking about like underwear ads and stuff like
that? Sure, say that you really like lacy underwear and bright red lipstick I don't know what people like. say you look like a pinup girl. I don't know. Is this the 40s? Say you like your sail hats and your lipstick and your boyfriend's Letterman jacket, and that's okay.
I don't know. I think that what people need to let go of, and I've calmed down now because I've said my piece.
Yeah.
And I think that what women need to let go of, and I say this as a woman who still needs to let go of some shit. I'm not saying I'm perfect. Like, there are definitely some things that I need to let go of, and some biases that I need to get out of my mind, and just I need to be better. And you know, if I say weird, offensive shit, please call me out on it, because I want to improve. I want to be a better person, and I want to be a better ally. But what I think that the feminist movement needs is to get rid of that instinct to shame and that instinct to exclude. Because it goes back to what we were saying about the left needing to clean house. I think that if feminism is going to be the prevailing idea of the feminine, of the female identity, then we need to dive headfirst into intersectionality. Mm-hmm. We need to fully embrace
The roots of the movement,
which is that women are equal. All women are equal. Mm-hmm. If you identify as a woman, you are equal. If you see yourself as female, you are female, and you are worth something. You are worth everything.
Yeah.
Well, it's that idea that I heard again on a podcast actually today. I found out it was Bell Hooks that I was quoting the other day. The idea of calling out, I already forgot the actual words again. I looked at it and was like, remember those, because I'm going to forget them.
Oh, don't ask me to remember anything.
heteronormative, white supremacist. Fuck, man. Damn it. You know what? I'm gonna look it up, and you guys keep talking.
Okay. Well, one thing that I've noticed, I think it's because I have friends in that particular industry, but a lot of times, even intersectional people trying to be more intersectional leave out sex workers from their feminist identity.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's not okay, quite frankly.
No.
I have a friend from college who was... We keep up on Facebook now, even though we weren't that close, but she works at she's like a dominatrix, among other things, you know, in the sex industry, and she's a rad person, really, really cool. But you know, I hear a lot from her about getting left out or excluded from events because for some reason, some feminists think that that's problematic.
Yeah. That I will say is one of the things that I need to get better at.
Okay.
And I'm working really hard at it. And I'm recognizing, because like when I was in high school and even when I was in college, I was like, I was uptight, you know, like sexually and all of that. Like I was, and I'm still like getting into that. And like I said, I'm not perfect.
Yeah, I mean, and it's such a journey for all of us. Absolutely. Me too. I mean, I definitely have been on a journey this way too.
Yeah. No, and I, you know, yeah, it's, I'm gonna stop it there.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, but I think it's good to acknowledge. And I think maybe for all of us, part of what moving forward is to become better allies and to become better feminists and become, you know, whatever, is to acknowledge that we haven't.
Absolutely.
I think it's, so if you get too caught up in trying to defend yourself, you never end up growing, right?
Right.
So like, I'll acknowledge that I think that even though I've always, of course, you know, love women and I'm a feminist, I think that I probably fell into, especially like in my late teens, that problematic gay misogyny that kind of... rears its head in ugly, bizarre ways, and it's been a journey. And I'm working on not being that person anymore, and also being more, also not being a problematic white gay. You know, being inclusive and recognizing the intersectionality in my own community.
Absolutely.
And it's been a journey that I've made progress on, but only because it takes work, like anything else in our lives, like singing, like anything we do. It takes have to actually put time in.
It takes work, and it takes self-awareness.
Yes.
And it takes honest people around you.
I've got a few Bell Hooks quotes that I want to read.
Okay.
The first one is her first explaining of the term that I was looking for. Well, actually, I'm just going to read her quote. "Often in my lectures, when I use the phrase imperialist, white supremacist, capitalist patriarchy to describe our nation's political system, audiences laugh. No one has ever explained why accurately naming this system is funny. The laughter is itself a weapon of patriarchal terrorism." That's from The Will to Change. The other thing that I think really applies to some things that we've talked about today, shaming is one of the deepest tools of imperialist, white supremacist, capitalist patriarchy.
Yes.
Because shame produces trauma, and trauma often produces paralysis.
Absolutely.
Yes! That quote is so good and yeah. so accurate.
If you have not read Bell Hooks, do it. Because she has been writing feminist theory books for a while now. I mean, even I always recommend to any man that I know that, anyone that identifies male,
yeah.
that wants to kind of have a better understanding of what men are like, what their part is in patriarchy. The Will to Change is a fantastic book because it is an actual dissection of masculinity, which is something that is like, it's a fearful topic to have. Like the idea of talking about like masculine iconicism, like mm-hmm. what it means to be masculine and deconstructing that. Like the idea of a man crying is like so jarring to someone. Like I know because I cry all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I say that to someone and I like their face goes like, what? Because, you know, I'm a, you know, like wide-shouldered white man, like with a hairy face, and so the thought of me doing something that isn't masculine is jarring to someone that doesn't know me well.
Yeah.
And I like that right there, I think, is an interesting like thought. But anyway, I like taking it back to shaming, like if you participate in shaming underprivileged cultures, no matter what your background is, it's not helpful. You're feeding into the same, diminutive perspective.
Yeah, I mean I guess shame really is the key to misogyny in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's what we use. It's the same thing that people use to put down. We discussed this last time, Kellyanne Conway.
Yeah.
When they were saying that she's unladylike for sitting the way, you know, Kellyanne Conway, who's a lying monster, and we're gonna shame her for being unladylike. That's, which is a bizarre construct anyway.
Which is like, honestly, I'm sure that the Trump administration saw that and was like, good, let's stick with that. Like let's all forget that she is a like she's like churning the, you know, lie machine.
Yeah.
She's our box, our speaker of lies. Like let's ignore that. Let's talk about the fact that she sat casually, like
while taking a picture of a historic moment. I mean,
yeah,
whatever. But it's that's part of it. And people and just seeing liberal women on my feed given to that kind of misogyny shaming, I was just like, come on, we can't do this. This is how Trump wins, right? Isn't
yeah.
it? Because it's this attitude. This people don't see it though. I guess that's so ingrained. People are raised to believe it, and it's still the you know it's still this culture, and that's why women make less money than men. And that's why because we were believe that women should be beholden to these standards that men don't have to be or something, which
yeah.
is just part of this bizarre shame complex to keep women down.
Right.
I mean,
yeah. And there is something that I want to acknowledge that I said earlier about like white skinny feminism.
Uh-huh.
Like that is not me saying that I am not skinny shaming anybody. I know that there are thin women who are just naturally, you know, I'm there's
no, of course.
Yeah. Like that is just as someone, as a plus size woman, that is just something that I gravitate toward as privilege. And that is, you know, I'm all for body positivity no matter what your body is.
But there
and,
in
yeah.
this society is a thin privilege.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
There and is like, thin privilege.
That's, but, I think, that's, I think, when people go, why is it called feminism? Why isn't it called humanism or something? Or like egalitarianism, right, or something. It's like, you're playing a semantics game with the point. Whereas like the point isn't, let's make everybody equal. It is, but to do that, you have to recognize, you have to like look at the system and go, who's the underserved person here? And I think that like working towards serving that underserved group is the point. And I think that's why these things are named the way that they are. Like, it's the same argument that ends up with the Black Lives Matter movement, where people want to go like, oh, well, all lives matter. And I know that's like such a base immediate thing.
No,
to
but
be...
you're right. I mean, it's kind of like that. Oh God, there's all those cartoons going on explaining equality, and it's like, well, you could give everyone the same box to stand on to look over the fence, or you give the shortest person the tallest box, and then you're all standing at the same height. And that's kind of like, do you want to give everyone the same box, or do you want us all to be equal? Because it's not the same thing. And ultimately, if you really do want equality, if you do think all lives matter, we help the underserved people more.
It's, well, that's the whole thing that, like, that's how Stalin fucked up.
Yeah.
Is not the idea of to each equal, but to each his own need.
Yes.
Because that's how you achieve true equality, not by going like, well, let's give everybody $5. It's like, no. Like, what about... I don't know. Like... Yeah. That's a dumb example.
No, but I mean
I'm purely okay with I'm absolutely okay with sitting here and being the dumb one for the conversation about like women and intersectionality. Yeah. And because like I'm the white man and like I want to do that right now.
You want to be the dumb one?
Yeah.
That's fine.
Well, congratulations.
Yep. I made a bad reference. Anyway.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to talk about the Women's March?
I do.
Okay.
I have feelings about it.
Yeah.
And this is something I messaged a friend of mine today and was complaining about faux feminism, as I'm wont to do. And I was talking about something specific that was bothering me, and I likened it to the Women's March.
Okay.
And it was basically like, it's in the same vein as people saying, you know, people lauding the Women's March for like, oh, well, nobody got arrested. It's like, no shit, nobody got arrested. It was a bunch of white women. If it had been the Black Women's March.
And that's the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And on top of that, the people that organized the Women's March were all mostly people of color. And the people that spoke, like I watched Democracy Now! After the Women's March, the people that spoke in D.C., that spoke on the stadium, were mostly people of color. But like, they didn't get any recognition outside of Democracy Now!
Yeah.
There was no CNN blurb about the diversity of the organizing party of the Women's March.
Right.
It was just a series of images of white people marching.
It was like just pictures of Debbie from Des Moines giving a policeman her pussy hat, like, and shaking hands and laughing. That was the, like, look at this! Everyone's getting along!
Well, and what it's doing is that it's whitewashing a huge issue.
It is.
And it's like checking a box for the police when there is so much to fix within the police.
God,
it's like, oh, congratulations, you didn't arrest a bunch of white women.
Yeah.
Good for you, a bunch of peaceful white women.
Well, and I also think there's something to be said about why the majority of those people marched, which is the fact that we elected a man that said he wanted to grab women by the pussy.
Yeah.
And like, that's something to be said, and we could not like reasonably elect a woman for president without bringing up the fact that she used a private email server once. Like, and
just like
that,
everyone else in Trump's party right now.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Pence and, come on, guys.
And that's something a lot of people can agree on.
Yeah.
But the buck doesn't stop there. You know? The responsibility of like restructuring society and like working to make everybody on equal footing and addressing the problem, like the multitude of problems with the Donald Trump way of thinking, doesn't stop with the idea that he would sexually harass a person. Like, how far low is the bar that like that's the thing that that's the only thing that'll get that many people out for a march?
It's pretty low. My probably naive optimism, my optimistic outlook would be that maybe this March, problematic as it might have been in its representation, galvanized these women who would never have gotten out there.
Absolutely.
And hopefully started them on personal journeys of discovering further intersectional feminism, hopefully.
Well, yeah. And that is what I'm hoping as well. Yeah. And that is actually what I'm seeing, is that since the Women's March, a lot of people who, you know, and I'm just talking about my personal Facebook feed.
Yes.
There are so many women on my personal Facebook feed that since the Women's March have been so much more progressive, so much more outspoken about what they believe, mm-hmm. and, you know, speaking out for their rights. And that is huge. That is huge. But that's just the first step.
Yeah, and it's good, but it also doesn't stop there.
Absolutely. And that is my fear, is that some people are going to say, like, oh, well, now that I've said my piece and now that I've advocated for myself, like, great, mission accomplished. I am a feminist. Like, no. You are a Maryist. Stephanieist.
You don't get to like share a pretty graphic design of an Elizabeth Warren quote and think that you're like a feminist icon now.
No, you are someone who is going in the right direction. But yes. it doesn't stop there. You need to get out there. You need to stand up for people with, you need to use your privilege. Use your damn privilege.
The cabin pressure is dropped and you put on your own mask. Now put on the mask of the person next to you, because otherwise you're just saving yourself. And that's good. That's a human urge. And it's still good that you're following that urge to save yourself, but save the person next to you. And that's when you become good. I don't know.
Well, I want to go back on something that I said, because I don't love the idea of like hating on people that like Elizabeth Warren, because like Elizabeth Warren's great, but like I want to come back to the idea of like Bernie Sanders, people that were big Bernie Sanders supporters, and there was a lot of talk about like Bernie bros and the idea of being pro Bernie Sanders and then also like diminishing voices of other people, where it was like, well, you know, like it's this kind of like anarcho, like the anarchist move of, oh, I get that you're like worried about women's rights or you're like worried about black rights or whatever, but like we really should like figure out economic policy first. And it's like the idea of like ranking things that matter isn't helpful. I think that in every way, like, our world is so chaotic and so drawn in by different perspectives and different things that you can't make order out of that at this point. And I think anytime you try to, what you're really doing is doing disservice to people that's voices otherwise won't be heard.
Yeah. And yeah. Oh, you know, I hate that. I hate people who like, it just really gets under my skin when people, no, it's showing your privilege. If you can say, well, I think that this is going to be better for foreign policy, for instance, I don't know why you would think. But so I really, and I think that that's way more important than looking at the rights of minorities. You're not a good person and your values are distorted. But also it's just showing how much privilege you have. Because I know people who think that way, and people who vote Republican because there's certain economic issues, sure, fine. That's a thing we're going to acknowledge. But if you think that that's more important than your fellow citizens' rights, yeah, it's your right to think that way, but I do think you're kind of a monster. I mean, no. You're just really short-sighted. You're kind of a monster. I'm sorry to say it, but you can grow from this. You can get out of it. You don't have to be a monster forever.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have to acknowledge the fact that you're saying oftentimes, well, either your personal interest, whatever that might be, your business, even, I don't, people think this, Trump is going to be better for business. I don't understand, but they do. And they think that that's more important than their neighbors mm-hmm. existing. Than me being a person, than me getting married, than, I don't know, Maureen having access to healthcare. You know, it's something, you got to think about where your priorities are.
Yeah.
I would love to, because I think we should finish up, I would love to actually, like, put this in reverse and actually do some housekeeping in general. Like, I just want to recognize that, like, we're two men and a woman. Obviously, you're queer, but we're both cis and straight.
I'm obviously queer.
I mean, look at you.
No, right?
Go on.
But I think it's important to recognize that, like, we obviously aren't experts on other perspectives and things like that. I mean, I think we have something to say, but I think if you have heard something that we've talked about today, especially maybe in other episodes, and you want to weigh in, you know, I think that we'd be open to something that, like, if something that's really like, oh yeah, no, we were wrong on this point. Like, I would love to
please
read it
push
on the
back.
Show.
If there's, I want, yeah. Absolutely.
I don't want to be wrong, but I want to be told I'm wrong.
Absolutely.
I can't learn otherwise.
Absolutely. You know,
and like we're sorry, I cut you off.
I was gonna be redundant. Go.
I was gonna say we're also open to you know, if you're feeling really impassioned, I'd love to, like, potentially move into maybe having people on for QIOs.
Yeah.
You know, to kind of like get another voice in. So if you wanted to come on for some to talk about one of these issues and one of these kind of rambly issue driven segments that we do.
Mm-hmm. Or if you want us to read an email on air, we could do that too.
Yeah. Yes. No, please. We're at inbox zero right now.
Wow. Yeah.
Which is cool for me, but I want to hear your voice. Like, it's cool in terms of, like, me needing to reply to an email, but I mean, like, I want to be overwhelmed by the Scoppy Mag inbox.
That's ideal.
Yeah. So if there's something that we've said that you're like, that's a little problematic, or if there's something that you're like, hell yeah, like, this is what I think, or, you know, please, either way, I want to continue this conversation. Like I said, all day I was ranting and raving about faux feminism. Daniel can attest to this. Mm-hmm. I was like peeing earlier, and I was like, and another thing to Daniel. And
I'm in the other room, like, preparing a D&D session, because, like, that's my life now, apparently.
Yeah.
And
likely when we turn the microphones off, me and Daniel will be laying in bed and Daniel will be half asleep, and I'll be like, and you know what else pisses me off? Like, I will talk about this until I die. So, like, make it so I'm not talking to myself.
Join in, yeah.
Yeah.
Join us.
Cause I will say my piece into a mirror, but I'd prefer not to.
Yeah.
I want to talk to everybody about it.
Cool. Well, Josh, is there a place people can find you? Are you on Instagram?
I am.
Okay.
Are you on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter, more importantly, although mostly just, mostly retweet rad things I do or just go on a rant.
Yeah.
You can find me on Twitter at the Joshua Lewis.
Nice.
Yep.
Facebook page?
Yeah, I've been posting more and more problematic things globally, so you can even find me there. I think it's just my name, Joshua Lewis Smith. You can find me there.
Mm-hmm.
And hear my strange queer rants and what's pissed me off that day, because that's mostly what I use social media for now.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I mean, you know, what else are you going to use it for?
I mean, in this day.
Yeah.
In this time.
I will either post about this podcast, or I'll post a cat video on Daniel's wall.
That's not entirely true.
Yeah.
Vegan recipe.
I will also occasionally post
Maureen just made hummus tonight.
It was really good hummus.
I made two kinds of hummus.
I'm a huge fan of caramelized onion balsamic vinegar hummus.
Yeah, it's
and Maureen made that.
So good.
We don't have switchel right now.
We don't have switchel.
We talked about this.
That's because, like, Maureen's a convert now.
Yeah, I drank all the switchel.
You did drink it all. Well, I'm the only one that makes it.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you want to
But I'm oppressed, so, like...
Fair.
You have to give more switchel to Maureen, because so you can get her to... I'm going to finish that sentence.
All right, anyway. If you like what you heard, if you want to find out more...
I'm sorry.
If you want to find out more about us, you can head over to scoppymag.com. That's scapimag.com. You can find articles, old and new, written by me and others there. You can also find our different podcast episodes there. You can find us on Instagram at scoppymag. We have been posting there. Mm-hmm. You can find us on Twitter. If you tweet at us, we will reply. Other than that, we just post our, you know... episodes, but that's at Scoppy Mag as well.
Mm-hmm.
You can find us on Facebook under Scoppy Magazine. You can find us on iTunes under Scoppy Mag if you want to keep listening.
And as always, we are looking for donations. You can head to scoppymag.com, go to our About section. You can either be a subscriber or do a one-time donation. If you're a subscriber, we'll give you a shout-out on the show. If you do a one-time donation, we will send you a handwritten thank you note. We want to keep doing this. I've been on a job hiatus for the past few weeks, but that's going to, you know, kick back into gear. And so we're not going to be able to do this as often, but I...
But often.
I mean, often enough, but I mean, like...
We won't do it, like, extremely frequently. We'll probably have, like, a couple episodes a week, at
least. Well, right, but I mean, you know, I'd love to do this more often. Yeah. And the only way that we can do that is through donations. Mm-hmm. So if you want to hear us... If you want to hear me angrily talk about feminism more, shoot us a couple bucks.
Mm-hmm. If you haven't already, check out the earlier episodes from this week.
Yeah.
A couple of really great ones.
Give a little.
If I wanted to donate, how would I do that?
Good question. You would go to scoppymag.com, go to our About section. At the bottom, I think, there is a donate button. It's a big yellow button. It says donate. There are two like drop down menus for a one time donation or a subscription. There are clever names for all of the subscriber levels.
Mm-hmm. You can get yourself sorted by amount.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. The capitalist value system.
Yeah, because we're capitalists.
Great. Well, thank you all so much for listening. And as always, go out and make something.
Yep.
Intersectional.